and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. If you've been following the unprovoked war on Iran, you've been provided with at least two diametrically opposite interpretations. The war is Iran's fault, and it has been defeated. The other is the U.S. and Israel have suffered a strategic defeat. One thing is for sure, this conflict is far from over. Crosstalking the return to war, I'm joined by my guest Janine Yunus in Washington. She is president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. In Philadelphia, we have Daoud Kougtab. He is an award-winning Palestinian journalist and columnist with Arab News and Al Monitor. And in Sydney, we cross to Ali Mamouri. He is a research fellow at Deakin University and a former strategic communication advisor to the Iraqi prime minister. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Janine, let me go to you first. Before we go into all the nuances of what's been happening in the last 20, 48 hours and all the contradictions that go along with it, I have a very simple proposition to ask of you. So the United States and Israel attack Iran twice in the course of 1 year, and now the United States and Israel are claiming self-defense. Now, how does that work?
Well, it's pretty preposterous, and it's sort of the Western-centric approach these countries take, which is we can do anything, and then when we suffer some consequences, then we blame the people that we've injured in the first place. So it's just, it's utter nonsense. This is all part of the sort of U.S.-Israel approach to diplomatic relations these days, which is just attack, fight, and then complain that you're the victim afterwards.
Yeah, and what we do see right now, let's go to Philadelphia. Daoud, the war has started again. Again, let me think back. Maybe my memory isn't too good, but they had 40 days of what they call kinetic war, and the United States essentially threw up its arms and wanted a ceasefire. The Israelis certainly did. But now they're going back to war. So is this a pattern? Because that's what happened before the June war last year. That happened before the February war this year. I mean, so they want a ceasefire so they can regroup and they can start the war. So negotiations have never been part of this. That's always been fake. Go ahead in Philadelphia.
Well, I think that what is happening is the Israelis continue to be leading this discussion. I mean, the Israelis are the ones who got the Americans in the war, and the Israelis are the ones who broke up every effort to have an agreement. I don't think that there, you know, negotiations were totally fake. They were serious negotiations, and I think there were some issues that were close to being resolved. But it was the Israelis who attacked Beirut last week, or I think I don't know how many days ago, that broke this up, because the Israelis knew that if they attacked Beirut, then the Iranians will return, and then the Americans will return, and blah blah blah. So I think the Israelis cleverly, in their own way, in their own way, for Netanyahu to stay in power, are the ones who want this war to continue forever.
Yeah, and, you know, we've gotten down to, Ali, if I can go to you, it's often talked about who has vetoes and who has votes. We could go one way or the other. There are three shareholders in this caper here. We have the Iranians, the Israelis, and the Americans, okay? Each have a vote, or, conversely, each has a veto. Well, whose veto is relatively stronger than the other?
Just a few days ago, Benjamin Netanyahu in the Knesset said, addressing the Israeli member of their parliament, said that Israel needs a prime minister that could stop the U.S. president, could tell him do or not do, and could say no to him. So in this situation, it has become very clear that the most upper hand person in this triangle conflict is Benjamin Netanyahu, who was able to drag U.S. twice to a war that has no benefit and has no any issue related to the U.S. at all. Iran has not been any kind of a threat to the U.S. It was a threat to Israel, but not to the U.S. at all. So in such a situation, it seems that the one that could dictate the situation on Trump is Benjamin Netanyahu, who wants to impose hegemony on the entire region. And the party that is standing against that and does not want to accept this new reality is Iran. And this is the core situation, the core issue of this conflict in general.
Yeah, Janine, you know, it's often talked about who's top dog, as it were. Is it Trump or is it Netanyahu? And, you know, I'm interested in that conversation, but I think it's far worse in many ways because it's about the AIPAC, the Israeli lobby. It's about Christian Zionists. It's about huge donors. This is what Trump has to contend with. I think he's less afraid of Netanyahu as he is of the people around him that have actually funneled money into his campaign that made him president. He has to worry about them probably first and foremost. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, absolutely. That's, I think it's pretty clear that the Israel lobby is pulling the strings here. And one thing I do disagree with your previous guest about is that Iran posed any threat to Israel if Israel just, you know, intended to keep, just wanted to live in peace. I think Iran does pose a threat to Israel's expansionist aims and its genocide of its neighbors in Palestine and in Lebanon. And so that's the extent to which Iran sort of served as a check on Israel. And that's why Netanyahu and his extremist regime want to destroy Iran and turn it into basically a dysfunctional government so it can't pose any kind of, impose any kind of check on it. But yes, I don't know. It's not clear exactly who or why in the Israel lobby is controlling Trump, but I think it's obviously someone. I've heard some speculation it's Kushner. We obviously know Miriam Adelson has given quite a lot of money to his campaign, so he may be indebted to her. There's also the possibility of, you know, bribes, threats. We don't, the Epstein files everybody talks about, we don't know what's in there. So it's hard to say exactly what's going on, but I think there's some indication that maybe Trump doesn't really want this war. And I have said that before, that I think Trump's instincts are isolationist, and he actually did intend not to get into war when he took office in 2025. But the powers that be were just too significant for him to be able to fulfill his promises to the American people, and he's catered.
Yeah, well, and Janine, if I can stay with you, I don't want to go into the realm of hyperbole, but I mean, the Israelis, they wanted their probably their favorite foreign policy tool is assassination. So anyone that disagrees with Israel has got to be really careful. Okay, Dowd, one of the things I find fascinating about the time that we're in right now is that slowly but surely, you don't get this in Western media, but if you look at, first of all, if you listen to what the Iranians have to say and experts in the region, is that it's Iran is saying, if there's going to be negotiations, you're going to have to do it in a framework, and we have the cards to determine that framework. Now, if you want another round of war, we'll go through it. But nonetheless, surely, at the end of the day, you're going to follow a format that we demand. That means like having assets returned, reparations, the Strait of Hormuz. The Iranians have an approach, and they're slowly but surely teaching Donald Trump, you're going to have to follow these rules. Go ahead.
Well, the Iranians have been experts in how to deal. I mean, the Persian civilization has now been known to know how to survive, and their number one goal today is to survive as a country and as a regime, as a power. And they have survived, and they've excelled, actually, in their diplomatic usage of the assets that they have. They have they've done a great job with the Hormuz blockade, but they also have been consistent in saying that they want all the wars, including the war on Lebanon, to end. Right. And everybody thought that they were joking and they weren't serious about Lebanon. And then they discovered when they attacked Beirut that they were serious about Lebanon. The first time in the history that Iran attacked a third country, right, without being attacked directly by it. So I think Iranians have been quite successful in diplomacy. I mean, yes, they've been hurt a lot, and there's no doubt about the power of the Americans and the Israelis in hurting the Iranian people and the Iranian assets and so on. But as a country, as a government, they've succeeded to turn around, despite the killing of their leaders and so on, to wage successful both diplomatic and now we're seeing also a military campaign. Their anti-air missile seems to be working because the Israeli attack, the Israeli planes, unlike what everybody thought, they never actually reached the Iranian territory. They used a missile from outside it because they know if they get to their territory, they, their anti-air missiles, which we don't know how they got them, but they seem to be enough to deter the Israeli Air Force from coming close to the Iranian airspace. So, yes, I think militarily they're doing okay, but diplomatically they've been geniuses.
Yeah, I think, considering it's so asymmetrical. Ali, one of the things, again, part of this formula that I talked about earlier is that a ceasefire for all or a ceasefire for none. These are the kinds of things that are coming out of Tehran that I think that if eventually is going to be part of the policy to end this. A ceasefire for one or a ceasefire for none. Go ahead.
Sure. It seems that Iran has changed a few policies during the last year after the two wars. First of all is the move from strategic patience, sabre strategic, as they say it in Farsi, toward something that we could call it a strategic symmetry. Whatever you do, I'm going to retaliate at the same scale, and even sometimes more. So the second one, it seems to me some kind of also madman strategy. If you hit me once, I will do twice. So we can see sometimes that the retaliation is not proportional, as we got used to Iranians. When the commander of Quds Force was assassinated in 2020 in Baghdad, Iran just retaliated on one military base in Iraq, in Anbar. And same as well in the 12 days war, there was retaliation against Al-Udeid base in Qatar. But now we can see any kind of attack Iran get back with
force. All right, on that note, force to force. On that note, we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the return to war. We'll stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the return to war. Okay, let's go back to Jeanine in Washington. As it was already mentioned in this program, for the first time, Iran attacked Israel on behalf of a third party, in the case of Lebanon here, or more specifically, Hezbollah. I mean, this is a very interesting gambit because what it's doing and what we've seen over the last few days is, depending on how much you want to believe the media spin, the rift between Trump and Netanyahu, I'm not really there. I think a lot of this is theater here. But the policy is being challenged. I mean, Trump is being, an enormous amount of pressure is being put on him to not to alienate and be separated from his Israeli ally, even though Israeli ally got him into all of this trouble. I truly believe Trump wants to get out of this here, but Israel is going to keep him in it. But, I mean, Iran's playing a very interesting gambit right here because it's demanding Trump to make a decision that is impossible for someone in his position at this time.
Yeah, well, so I'm not sure exactly what your question is. Sorry.
No, what I'm just saying is that Iran is it's putting daylight between the Israelis and the Americans.
Well, I mean, sort of.
Yeah, you know, sort of.
Every few months there's the story that usually comes out in Axios from Barack Rabin about how Trump is so mad at Netanyahu and blah, blah, blah. And it's starting to look as though those stories are just plants because nothing actually really ever changes. And again, I do think there may be a difference in intentionality. I think Trump probably actually doesn't want to be in these wars. But in the end, it doesn't really matter. I mean, sure. He allows himself to keep getting dragged in. He's surrounded himself, I believe, with people who are very pro-Israel and push him to cater to Israel's most hawkish parts of, you know, of the government. and have been successful. So I'm not really sure in the end whether what Trump wants in his heart matters, so long as he continues to keep doing the bidding of the Israel lobby.
Yeah, okay, let's go to Philadelphia. That, I think another thing is here, and this is a very depressing approach, Trump just wants to avoid losing. And he's looking for different ways to avoid that outcome, hence going back to military force, because everything that else has been said hasn't gotten where he wants to be. He wants a win somehow, and he can't find it. And the use of military force is the easiest one to rely upon. Go ahead in Philadelphia.
Yeah, his pride is his biggest enemy now. So, yes, I think his pride is hurting him. But I think there's a few things that I think we need to put out. Trump is not running again. So all the people who gave him money for the last run, he's not indebted to them anymore. I mean, normally we've seen American presidents in their second term have much more independent decision making, including on the Palestine-Israel conflict. We saw that Obama passed that, allowed the Security Council Resolution 2334, which made all settlements illegal. And yesterday the Knesset approved, apparently, the government, 61 new settlements. But so the American president doesn't really have to worry about election. Now, he probably does have to worry about the midterm. And continuing this war is hurting him in the midterms. I just interviewed Chris Rapp in Philadelphia, who ran against AIPAC, ran against his own Democratic Party and won by 15 points. And others, you know, in New Jersey, Adam, and others, and now we're seeing in Maine and Texas, he's going to get a beating in the midterms, or his party is going to get a beating in the midterms. And the more the war continues, the moment I arrived in Boston for my daughter's graduation, the gas was $4.67 or something like that. Amazing. So, I don't know what his strategists are telling him, but he certainly is allowing his pride to take over his own policy decisions.
Ali, where do we go from here? I mean, the Americans specifically have claimed that they've attempted diplomacy over and over again, and they can't seem to get a deal, as the president likes to say. I mean, if you're in Iran's shoes, they're incapable of negotiating in good faith. That's why they were expecting the war to continue, and as a result, they're prepared for that. It doesn't look like the U.S. military is. It's just striking in lieu of nothing else to do because they can't deal in good faith. They cannot recognize Iran's legitimate security concerns. That's their limitation, Ali.
Exactly. The issue is that the U.S. is stuck in some kind of escalation trap. The negotiations with Iran has worked in 2015. We had a nuclear deal. It was a great deal. It stopped Iran from developing any kind of, even getting close to any kind of military nuclear program. All the issue of the enrichment over 60% and other issues related to the nuclear file started after Donald Trump pulled out of the agreement in 2018 or 17. So the issue, and after that as well, last year, before 12 days war, both parties have been very close. Iranian have been agreed to provide some kind of concession, extra concession, to give some kind of victory to Donald Trump. Before the recent war as well, there was some other concession, not posing the enrichment for 5 years or 12 even years, accepting U.S. inspectors to come on Iranian soil, which has been happening for the first time, this kind of agreement. But U.S. tried the war, and there is no any good faith from U.S. part. Now the situation has stuck to a way that either Donald Trump needs something very much higher than what has been already provided or offered by Iranians, which is not possible for Iranians, or he needs to go toward extra escalation. Extra escalation is dangerous for U.S. because nothing left more than what has been already happening is either using nuclear bomb or using some kind of massive destruction of the Iranians' infrastructure, which is war crime, And even that, I don't think Iranian's system will collapse. Still, we're going to have more retaliation.
I agree. You know, Janine, one of the interesting ironies of all of this is that obviously the Israelis have taken full advantage of this conflict to extend their Greater Israel project. But it's reached its limits here because however we define victory for the Iranians, which they have won this war, it's how the hostilities are wound down is the question now. But this will be a clear message to the Israelis and their project, because remarkably, many times in this program we've talked about the fate of the Axis of Resistance. And you must say, before this war, it was very low standing they had. What happened to Hezbollah? What happened to Hamas? The Houthis? And now all of a sudden, the Axis of Resistance, or resilience, you could call it, is very much back in vogue here. And Iran has made it very clear an outcome for them in this conflict is going to see recognition of those individual groups' rights and ambitions.
Yeah, and I also wanted to touch on the point you just made about the diplomatic aspect, which is I don't really see how Iran can expect anything, given that this current war started with a strike on a girls' school, actually a double tap, where over 160 young girls were killed, either through U.S. negligence or intentionally. I don't really know which is worse. There has never really been any good faith in this war. There's been intentional destruction of civilian infrastructure. And as you note, the expansionist nature of the war, which involves Israel also striking Lebanon, various areas of Lebanon, is sort of creating a much greater regional conflict, which mm-hmm. I think in the end is probably what Israel wants. They want to destabilize the entire region. And now they're talking about Turkey too, so we don't know if the U.S. will get drawn into some kind of conflict there. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens within the next year or two. So this is real. I think this has really been a very serious mistake on the U.S.'s part. It will be tragic for the American people, not to mention the Iranian people.
Yeah, I mean, and what? There's only one party in all of this. Let me go to Philadelphia, Dow. There's only one party in all of this that wants the war to continue, and that's Israel.
Yes, it is Israel, but I think more specifically it's Netanyahu personally, because you have a prime minister who needs to win elections, and he thinks he can win the elections by winning a war. Or at least continuing the war, because as long as the war is continuing, they're going to say, I'm the only one who can deal with the war better than anybody else. I have the experience, I have the relationships, and so on. And he has a court case that is being delayed every day because the war is continuing. So he needs the war to continue more than the Israeli people in the Israeli government. Some in the government, yes, are quite in supporting. And now we're hearing a lot of his opposition saying continue to do the war in Lebanon. But I think that is more electioneering than real policy. The problem is that you have a president who is unattached. He has nobody giving him good advice in the White House that is divorced or is isolated from the reality, and he's listening more to his donors than to his national security advisors, if he has any. So we have a problem both in Washington and in Tel Aviv, and I think the Iranians and also probably the Chinese and others are watching as the Israelis and the Americans self-implode. And they're, you know, shooting themselves in the foot every time. And the Iranians are regrouping their military. They're recouping their control over the country. And in the end, they are in control.
Yeah, and there's one thing that we haven't mentioned here is that as long as this war goes on and as long as I don't know. I mean, the last time I did this program, Trump had claimed, let me check my notes, 37 times that a deal was impending. Now it's at least 38. Maybe I'm behind. Okay, the news moves quickly, but let's just call it 38. But that's 38 times, everyone, that you can go dip into the market, okay? I mean, I'm being very, very cynical, but it's very true. If we can't end this war, let's make some money off it. All right, on that cynical note, we've come to an end. I want to thank my guests in Washington, Philadelphia, and in Sydney. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.